I mean, you're in Tampa. Joey spends some time in Boca. Say, coincidentally, you two guys were to bump into each other.
Right.
What happened?
So I'm a very confrontational, hands-on person. I know I'm not talking because I sound good, even out here to this day in Tampa, wherever I go. I'm very confrontational. No one's going to abuse me. No one's going to punk me. It's just not in my vocabulary. It don't happen. I don't care what I did in my life. That's just who I am as a person. He's 62 years old. He's 120 pounds. That would be the biggest mistake of his life if he ever tried to get nasty with me or confrontational with me, because I will slap him right where I see him. It's no negotiating. He's going to hit me back. We're going to fight. That's all it's going to be. There's going to be no one way. Me running is going to be what it is. There's nothing. I don't care about titles and names. I don't care about that. That means nothing to me at all. It never did. So if he ever did bump into me and he ever did say to him something slick, I will assault him. It's that simple.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. And boy, do we have an episode for you today. Christmas Eve episode dropped. That's right. We've got one for you. Gene Borello, former Bonanno crime family street enforcer, came on the show. Gene has been in the, I don't want to say news of late, not headline news, mainstream news, but in the social media news, feuding with Joey Merlino a lot, the alleged boss of Philadelphia for quite some time, who recently started a podcast. And him and Gene have shared some jabs back and forth, and that's what he was referring to there in the opener. So we do get into that, him and his beef with Joey Merlino. We cover a lot of Gene's story. He grew up in Howard Beach, went under the Bonannos. I mean, Gene was a street kid, stuck up wise guys, arsons, burglaries, armed robberies, you know, attempts on his life, shootouts, you know, his home was shot up. He eventually did get arrested, went to Rikers Island, tough-ass prison, if anybody knows anything about Rikers Island. Not an easy road to hoe going into Rikers. Done 19 months and then decided to cooperate. So we'll get into all of that story, what led up to that cooperation here on Crime and Entertainment. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's get right into it here on Christmas Eve episode with Gene Borello. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. This interview's been a long time coming. Please welcome to the show, Gene Borello. Gene, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
So I've been following you for a while, man. I know we touched base last year. I bought your book, checked it out, and I think you had to go and do a little stretch earlier this year. What'd you do, like 6 months?
Eight months.
Eight months?
I got violated. Yeah, they violated me in when did they put me in? September. I'm sorry, they put me in February. February 8, 2023.
Yeah, because I was actually up there in February. I think I was like, I left and I think you got violated the week or so after, because it was right around, your father unfortunately passed away around that same time, right?
Right. Yeah, he passed away January and then I went away a month later.
Okay. Yeah, but while I was up there, I think the weekend he unfortunately had passed away. I seen you had posted it on social media. So, right. You know, start off our condolences for that as well, because that's kind of, we'll get into that here a little bit, but you know, it's your first time on the show. Obviously, you're a former guy involved in organized crime, and we're just going to kind of take it from the top because it's the first time you've been on our show. You've been on a lot of other platforms, making the rounds here of late. Got some, I want to say, online beefs, if you will, with, you know, the likes of Joey Merlino. We'll get into that too, but we'll just take it from the top, man. What was early life like? You know, what was it like growing up where you were at? And we'll just kind of work our way up from there.
Sure. Absolutely. So, I mean, basically you could say I started off when I was about, I started off in the street about 14, 15 years old, you could say. Small time, petty, you know what I mean? Just, you know, a kid just, you know, seeing what's around you and kind of knowing, you know, I'm related and, you know, not really involved. You know, I could say you don't lie to nobody. I didn't get involved until I was about 18, 19 years old, but I started off small and, you know, all the neighborhood guys that we hung out with, everybody was, you know, connected. Everybody was somebody related to somebody. So that's how I got started off in crime. I started selling drugs at a young age. And then I just, like I said, everybody went their own way. Like, it was like a farm system, you could say. Everybody in that neighborhood, it was like a farm system for the five families. Mm-hmm. Everyone either went to the Gambinos, Columbos, whatever, da, 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 or people went to a regular job. Me, for instance, I went with the Banano family, and I never looked back. You know, some kids, you know, were bad when they were younger. And then when they hit like 18, 19, you didn't see them no more. They went and got a job. When I hit that age, I became an absolute, you know, menace, should I say.
Was your father in the life as well?
My dad was a street guy. My dad was not a mafia guy. My dad was a lunatic, should I say. My father was a wild guy. Did lots of prison time. He was, you know, a tough guy, all that stuff, but he wasn't in that life.
Right.
My mother's side was more that. Now, we had a cousin on my side named Johnny Boy. Johnny Boy was a killer for John Jr. You know, he was a serious kid at a young age. That was my first cousin on my father's side. But for the most part, the mafia stuff came from my mother's side.
I've heard you discuss him in previous interviews, and you say a lot of people would tell you that knew him personally, that you reminded them of him a lot.
Right. So he was Johnny Boy. I was Genie Boy. And it's funny because his father was like one of the toughest guys around, like back in the day for like Canarsie. He was older, and my dad was real wild, but they weren't mafia guys. You know what I'm saying? Right. They were just tough guys, Italian guys that grew up in that area and knew everybody, but just didn't get involved with that. They all went the right way, should I say, when they got older. They kind of got out when they did. And unfortunately, his son was killed in my cousin was killed in 1996 by Vito Guzzo. I'm sure everybody knows who that is.
Right.
He was a known hitman for the Colombo family. Mm-hmm. Shot my cousin 26 times, something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you decided you were going to go into that life, why the Bananos?
So it's funny you say that because I wasn't supposed to be with the Banano family. Obviously, I was born Gambino. What ended up happening is that my best friend was Bobby G. Bobby G. Alonzo was the nephew to Vinny Asaro and mm-hmm. Ronnie G. Alonzo. It just so happened that when I was coming up, I was supposed to be, I don't know if you know Al Trucchio. I'm sure you've interviewed Hootie before, right?
I've actually not interviewed Hootie. I've talked to him a lot, but I've not had him on the show yet.
I was originally supposed to be his crew. That's what was my family friends, Todd, Jerry, Al, Mike Rock, that whole crew. And what had happened is Al is sons of Ronnie One-Arm. Ronnie One-Arm was a serious, dangerous gangster, and he was more of a violent street guy. Al was not. Al was a moneymaker. So when I was running around using guns, he didn't like that. Mm-hmm. That was one thing. And he was a captain of the crew. So I got into a beef with a kid named Phil Galena, and I wanted to kill him. And he had hired Albanians to kill me. They shot my friend in the neck. They shot my other friend, and I want the retaliation. The Gambinos, Al and them, was saying, no, no, no guns. I was upset about that. I says, listen, this guy, I want permission. I want to kill him. They're saying no. They're trying to do, you know, coffee and cake, sit down shit. I'm not trying to do that. So the other side, because I was floating, I still had my best friend over there, Bobby and them, and Ronnie and them, we'll take you back. He goes, do whatever you got to do to them. So that's really what was my turning point of why I picked which way I was going to go. It could have been the other way. I could have ended up going with Al and them if they would just took my back.
Right.
That's really all it was.
So the Bananas really kind of let you be who you were wanting to be, and the other one was trying to put the reins on you, so to speak.
Well, the Banano family was hands-on, you know, pistol packing, running around like we were doing. And they were more dressed like a gangster, but not act like one.
Right.
You understand?
Yeah. Yeah, I got you.
And I was more of the, I don't want to look like one. I want to act like one.
Yeah. Now, are you cousins with Anthony Ruggiano? Is that the bloodline with you?
Yeah, sure. That's my cousin. Yeah. Okay. My grandfather and his mother are brother and sister. Sure.
Okay. I've met Anthony quite a few times. We've done a lot of stuff together in New York. He's a nice guy.
Anthony, his son was like my brother. So his son is my age. His son is 40. Yeah. So his son, we grew up together since we're babies, you know.
One of the, when we've done some stuff in the studio together, I think it was earlier this past year, the Uber driver actually dropped all of us off at his house where he was staying at, right there in Gotti's old neighborhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and he drove me around the area and kind of showed me spots and stuff. He's a cool guy.
Anthony goes back to the old school. You know, Anthony's a lot older. He's 70 years old. People don't realize that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So he goes back. You know what I mean? He was running around in the 70s.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about his son was who showed me around the area. He still lives there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Little Anthony. Absolutely. Yeah. He's in Howard Beach still. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He showed me around and I got a little small beef with him. He texted me one night and said he had an inside on a hockey game of a friend of his that had a club in Vegas and that the goalie was in there fucked up. Like so bad, they had to put him in an Uber. Like multiple guys had to carry him and put him in an Uber. So he's like, I'm taking the other side. And they got blew the fuck out. And I'm like, I should have just took the over and we'd have been all right. But I took the other side and we lost. But no, he's a cool guy. So when you really started getting in heavy, who are the players at this time in the Bananos? Who's like the big names in the street? Is this Junior Gotti? Where are we at here time-wise?
Right, so when I fully entered and I was really ripping and running, John Jr. was already labeled no good.
Okay.
He was already out the game. John Gotti Jr. wasn't even around no more. He was in prison, sorry, but he was already labeled no good.
Right.
So Howard Beach was ran by two different crews. It's either Gambino or Bonato. That's who's running the Ozone Park Howard Beach forever. It takes turns.
Right.
Everybody will go away in the Gambinos, and everybody comes home in the Bananos. Then the Bananos take over, then they all go to jail, and the Gambinos come home. It just switches. That's all it is.
Right.
So I was running around at the time with Vinny Asaro. Of course, everybody knows who that is.
Right.
Legendary mobster. He was a Latanza heist. He did the Goodfellas heist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was a powerhouse captain since the 70s. I was right-hand man to his nephew, Ronnie Gialonzo. Ronnie was a multimillionaire, very vicious, dangerous guy. I did all work for him. Then there was Mike Palmasio, Mike Patavona, Nicholas Festa Pudgy, and Bobby Gialonzo. And that was like the main guys, Ricky Kessler. And that was pretty much the crew that we were running around with.
Okay. And you would stick up wise guys.
Oh yeah, we have. Yeah.
But not so much, like you get labeled a lot, like here, oh, a home invader, robber. Did you do that to the general public?
No, everybody knows that. That's just something that they created to make me look,
worse.
Bad. Yeah, well, not only that, they have to create this persona of you being this horrible, horrible person to make themselves feel better about themselves. They know what I was really doing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I did everybody's dirty work. So
right.
They have to create this thing to make you look like this, monster, which, we were doing bad things. You know what I'm saying? I shot people. I stabbed people. I did a lot of bad things, mm-hmm. A lot of bad things I did in my life,
I think the majority of America that's not really too in tune with his life probably gets their basis of how it works off movies and television. Television being The Sopranos.
That's not true. Yeah.
And the reason why I make this comparison is because Robin, other wise guys,
right.
They tell a story in there of how Tony and I think Furio got made because they stuck up a card game. The right people got some of their money back. It was kind of a statement made and they got made. But when Jackie Jr. tries it, it gets botched and he winds up getting killed for it. So it's kind of like you have a high risk, high reward. Did you have any reservations that I might get killed for this or it was just not giving a fuck?
I mean, yeah, we were running around real wild. So we weren't really thinking about it, even the shit that we were doing. And like I said, obviously it made us who we are. It made the reputation that me and Bobby accumulated that people were so scared of us. I mean, literally, I'm telling you, we were calling up drug dealers and we would tell them, oh, we got to talk to you. What's up? Come see us. We would just basically tell them, listen, you're going to pay us. So we're going to rob you once a week. And they would just pay not to deal with the bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
What about did it ever escalate to beefs where people were contemplating maybe putting a contract out on you? What was some of those?
So I had talked about one that we did in 2011. There was a kid named AD. He was a big drug dealer out of Queens and we were terrorizing him. And he basically told somebody he put $50,000 on our head. And me and Ronnie Manns, he was one of my guys. We caught him by, we heard he was about the strip club and we ran down on him and basically made him shit himself. We grabbed him outside, put guns to him, put him in cars, everything. That's what we were doing. We were running down on you and letting you know, is this true? He goes, no, I swear to God, I didn't say that. We says, we know you said it. We find out if it happens again and you're going to get killed. You know, that's how we were. You know, we were very hands-on, and we were backing up what we were saying. Mm-hmm. We were brutal. You know what I mean? So.
So, I mean, points are being made.
Big time.
You robbed, I think I've heard you say, one of Quack Quack's card games?
I did, yeah. Junior Ruggiero's card game, yeah.
So, when you're in there, it's kind of like that scene from Sopranos. You're just holding everybody up. You're taking everybody's money. It don't really make a damn who's at the table.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we're not really thinking, you know, we were young, 20 years old. You know what I mean?
So are you guys kicking up to anybody? You kicking up to Vinny or?
I mean, you see, this is how they are. They'll take the money, but then when they find, like, they know what you did.
Right.
If it comes to light, they'll make it like they had no clue
about
it.
Yeah.
But if it don't come to light, it's like, you know, gimme.
Give me my text.
Yeah. That's how they all are, bro. That's how they all are. Like, nobody's different than anybody. I want to explain that to you. We're all thugs. We all do fucked up shit. No matter what they say, oh, I was like Skip, I was this. You all do fucked up shit. We all have bad crimes. You know what I mean? That's a part of that life. So nobody's going to sit here and say, oh, I was a good gangster. No, there's no such thing. You know, you did horrible things. You shot people. You tied people up. You killed people. You dug holes. You know, you did fucked up shit if you're a part of that life. Otherwise, you really weren't living that life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Did you have what you would consider, like, you know, a mentor or somebody that kind of took you under their wing to try to maybe put your skill? Because the skill set that you're basically explaining that you had is, you know, you were brutal. You were a hands-on guy. You know, you made shit happen. Did anybody try to, like, take you under their wing and mentor you in any way? Or was you just not really feeling that either? What was that like?
Yeah, I was mentored. Ronnie did a lot. But, you know, I brought a lot to the table. And why I brought a lot to the table is I made my crew stronger because I brought fear. And what I do is it's like you're not selling wolf tickets. So right. If guys, you know what I mean? So if guys owe money, they know I got to pay. If I don't pay this crew, they're going to come. They're going to hit me with a fucking hatchet, beat me with a bat, shoot me, kidnap me. You know, you got some crews that nobody cares about paying because they're not doing nothing.
Right.
So I brought that fear. Ronnie G and me brought that fear because Ronnie was a brutal hands-on guy. And so was I. So I know we had other guys that were tough guys too, but we were really brutal hands-on where we beat you up in your store in front of people. You know what I mean? Like, we were brutal. So Ronnie was mentoring me and Ronnie was teaching me the way and everything. But at the same time, me and him were two hotheads and just wild. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it fit perfect.
Okay. What was Vin like, Vinny?
Psychotic. He was a fucking psychopath.
I mean, I've read a lot on him. He seems like a very interesting guy. Like, was he intimidating? Was he one of those guys, if he liked you, you were good? I mean, did he, you know, could he put the fear of God in you or whatever you believe in? I mean, what was he like?
Unpredictable. That's the only word I could say. It's like, you never know who you're going to get when you're with him. One day he's nice to you. Next minute he's not. You'll never know if he really likes you or not. You'll mm-hmm. never know. You'll never know. I mean, he yelled at me so much that you would think he hated me, but deep down he loved me. He's telling everybody, brag about me, tell the neighborhoods. But when he was in front of me, he was screaming at me, throw things, always flipping out on me.
Kind of like those old school football coaches, you know, when they stop yelling at you, that's really when you need to worry, when they stop caring.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
There was a situation where I think it was a janitor that had to get roughed up.
Oh, yeah. I was supposed to kill him.
And you were able to get out of killing him. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, that was a bad one, man. He was a fucking janitor. What happened was he was friends with Bobby Glasses. That's what they – Vin used that as an excuse of him being around somebody. What happened was Vin, like I said, likes to plant his flag in places, like on delis and places. And Vin planted his flag on Cross Bay Boulevard at this place called Sapienza. So he was in Sapienza and, you know, just living everyday life. And he got into an altercation with this guy, Mike. And the guy, Mike – I guess Vin did something to him. Vin's 80 years old. You know, you're 40-something years old. You shouldn't be hitting him anyway. They got into an altercation. He ended up throwing Vin to the floor. Vin at the time is the consigliere of the family, pretty much. All right? So you basically hit him, the third in command. The guy's a legendary gangster. What'd you really think the outcome was going to be?
Yeah.
He's saying he didn't know. Well, he's saying he didn't know that was Vinny Asaro. That's what he's stating. So he went to Bobby Glasses, and Bobby Glasses went to Vin and says, do me a favor. I know the guy. Leave him alone. Do me a favor. He didn't know it was you. Vin goes, okay, he didn't know it was me. That's fine. But if I see him near me or he comes near the deli, he's going to get dealt with. I'm going to let it slide for now. But that's not what Vin was doing. Vin was plotting the whole time. Vin wanted to get him the whole time. He did not let it go. Like I said, Bobby Glasses got picked up for a double murder from the 80s. They locked him up in 2011. He blew trial, and I'm not lying to you. 4 days after, he's calling me. The guy blew trial. Okay. He's calling me 4 days after the guy blew trout. I said, what's the matter, Vinny? He goes, I need to take care of something right away. You know, so, you know, he was basically said, listen, I want this guy eliminated. I says, okay, you know, I'm not questioning. I'm just saying, all right. He was literally watching his routine, where he goes, where I could get him. This guy's 80 years old at the time. He's 80. He's literally scoping him out, showed me everything. And then I says, in my brain, I says, wow, we're going to make everything on fire. We go and kill this janitor in broad daylight in front of everybody. This guy's a fucking broom pusher. He's not no gangster. I says, we got to switch this. And I went behind his back kind of and talked to him. He says, listen, he's ordering to kill this guy. We got to talk him out of it because you can't. You got to do it. You can't say no. So they kind of went to him and explained to him, like, this is bad. This is going to be heat in the neighborhood. You don't want this. So he switched the order to beating him up really bad, you know?
Who was the boss at this time?
The boss of the family was Tommy DeFury, which was Vin's right-hand man because so I'll break that down so people understand. Vinny Gorgeous, when he got life in prison in ADX, he handed the family over to Mike Mancuso, Mikey DeKnows.
Right. Just went away, right?
Right. Mikey DeKnows was the boss of the family. It's his family. But what happened was he went away, so he appointed – you appoint people.
Right.
Acting street boss. You're not the official boss of the family, but you'll run the family.
Yeah.
So he appointed Tommy DeFury, which was our first street boss in like years. So he was the actual street boss, but they wanted Vin to take the family. But Vin said, I don't want it. I don't want it. He goes, well, you got to take the second. He goes, I'm not taking it. So they made him a captain on the committee. He still was complaining about it. And they had him running the family with Tommy DeFury. So when that whole thing was going on, he was literally running the family with the boss.
I've heard that a lot where guys maybe have the ability to run, but they know that being the boss or the head of the family is really nothing but a lightning rod. I know that a gas pipe put a lot of people in front of him, even though he probably really wanted it himself. He put a lot of people in front of him to get it. That's not really uncommon. I've heard that a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, well, Vinny was an old timer at the time. He didn't want to be bothered with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're not supposed to, you know, turn that stuff down. But
yeah,
he's allowed to do it. He had like his own rules, this guy, you know, because he was like very well respected. And he's a third generation, his grandfather, his father, you know, he comes from a deep bloodline of organized crime. So, like I said, he's one of the most respected guys at the time in that Bonanno family. Everybody had the utmost respect for him.
Wasn't there a situation where he shot a girlfriend of Charles Carniglia?
He did, and he sent his son and Ronnie to kill her.
Oh, he wanted to kill her?
Oh, yeah. She cracked the bottle over his daughter's head. Mm. Yeah. Donna Cavacanti.
And Charles Carniglia was a pretty tough customer himself.
Yeah, but when it comes into that world, Charles was just a soldier. Vinny was a high-ranking captain at the time, running a whole – it's a different. When you get into outside looking in, you'll say, oh, my God, that's Charles Carniglia. He's just a soldier. When you get inside the organized crime, these guys are on the bottom, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
They're on the bottom.
There's ranking. I mean? There's rankings to it, and those rankings hold a lot of power that most people wouldn't understand.
People don't understand that. Tommy Karate killed 100 guys, but he took orders.
Yeah.
He's on the bottom. He's a soldier. Mm-hmm. He took orders. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There was a situation with a traffic accident that led to an arson case.
Yeah.
Was it as simple as he just got cut off? What was the details of this traffic?
That's how he is. Yeah. He got cut off on the road, took his plate number down, and that was it. Wanted his car blown up.
Jeez. And did he call on you for that?
Yeah. You know, so I had my guys, which was John Gotti III, little Gotti was with me, Kid Fat Matt. I had like a bunch of young kids with me waiting for me to go in. I was proposed at 27 years old. Everybody's waiting for me to be inducted as a member and then bring my guys in, which I had every young kid. Like if you talk to the real guys that know me, I was like the guy coming up waiting for my time.
So that's interesting. You had a young Gotti. You would think that if they were going to stay in that life, that they maybe would have stayed on the Gambino side, or was that just kind of like they didn't want to have anything to do with the Gotti's at that point?
No, that name was Tarnish. So okay. Gotti's name was Tarnish because of the show Growing Up Gotti, the John Jr. being, you know, a rat, labeled a rat. Right. So it was all ruined, that name. So this kid was tough. I took a liking into him, and I was telling my people he's good. They're like, no, we don't want it. He's your responsibility. I said, that's fine. I'll take him. I like him. He's got balls, the kid. And I pulled him in. At 16 years old, I pulled him in.
What is your opinion? And I just want to sidebar just for a second. What is your opinion on John Sr.?
Oh, he's real deal.
do you think the flash and everything did hurt?
I said this to somebody in another show. He's a gangster. There's nothing you can do. That's just what he was. He wasn't having it. He just said, I got to save my friends. You know what I'm saying? That's what he did. He killed them. He killed that guy because he had to save his friends. They were going to kill him and his whole crew. And he did exactly. He reminds me, obviously, I was never high like he was, but I have the same personality. Like, fuck that. Let's do it. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, as far as him taking out Paul, but I meant as far as, like, you know, being on Time Magazine, talking to the press. Like, at that time, there really wasn't a lot of that.
No, but that era was starting to come in.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it definitely came in. Yeah.
There was a lot of guys doing that. They just couldn't do it at his level. You know, I'm not sticking up for him because he definitely was the downfall with all the flashiness. But at the end of the day, he went out the way he went out. He didn't change for nobody. He did what he did. He took his life in prison. He didn't complain once. You know what I mean?
But so, I think modern era, obviously you got guys like Al Capone, who Chicago loved. And I think modern era, though, Gotti was the first person that the public fell in love with because he became like that anti-hero, the one that could go up against the government. And, you know, he would do things for the people in his area, put on the fireworks shows. And let's face it, like, people love that. You know, WWE, for example, people love the stone cold Steve Austin that comes to work and stuns the boss and yells F you and all that. People love that. And I think that's what was so compelling about him.
Well, if you look from the outside looking in, like, where we're from, when someone disappears or gets killed, that's normal.
Right.
So the regular person, they're like, oh, my God, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, when, you know, oh, my aunt's husband went missing in 89. Well, you know, they killed my, you know, my my cousin Anthony killed his own brother-in-law. You know that story. Yeah, Frank Baggio.
Yep.
Because he slapped my Aunt Jenny. You know, this is the part of the life. When things like this happen, we're used to things like this. Looking from the outside in, you're like, but it's our own world. Still, we're used to this stuff. When you got, he was like God over there in Howard Beach and Ozone Park in these areas. He did a lot for the community too.
Yeah.
You don't realize that. So people don't realize he committed all these murders, they say, but most of the people that he was killed was bad guys. Right. Other crime guys, mob guys. So it's not like he's out there killing a doctor or a stockbroker.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
there's been a lot of debate on how many people Gotti may have actually killed.
He never killed nobody himself.
That's what I tell a lot of people. If you watch, which is the more popular, and I know you can't base a lot of the stuff off movies. Me and Anthony do a show on that, Behind the Gangster. You've probably seen clips of it where we talk about how movies take a lot of liberties. But if you watch that 96 Gotti movie, I don't think Armando Santi kills anyone in there.
Well, that's known that he never killed nobody. He's a tough guy with his hands, and he's very, how can I say, he's a leader.
Right.
He's a leader. He could have did it himself. I'm not knocking him, saying that he very capable, very tough. Yeah. I've heard he's real tough with his hands, but he just never was a trigger guy. Right. That happens sometimes. I have friends of mine that, well, they'll knock you out cold. They never touched a gun. Yeah. It's just some people are meant to do certain things. You know what I mean? Sammy Gravano, he killed 19 people. You know, he did all these, you know, crimes, but that was his department.
Yeah, that was
John
really
says,
good.
All right. When we need somebody dealt with, I got my guys that do that stuff. Yeah. Department's for everything.
If you got guys like Sammy under you that'll do that, then you don't necessarily need to go out and do it yourself.
Yeah, Sammy killed my friend's grandfather. I put him under a store.
Jeez.
Yeah, Tommy Spinelli. That was my dad's good friend. They worked the unions together. And he went missing in 89. And they killed him, put him under a store.
Well, where were you at during the time when John Jr. took over?
I was young, but I was just young stuff. I was still coming up, you know. But he was like more like, he was more out like in the early, he's been gone since 97. I want to say when he went to that, when he did that federal pinch, when he got locked up in 96 and 97, I believe it was around that time. That's it. He was. That's it. It was done, you know.
And you know, he did talk.
Yes, he did proffers.
Yeah, 100%. He did proffers. And that's, you know, depending on how I feel like, and I've heard this phrase used, the goalpost always gets moved around when people talk about, oh, well, this person went away, but he wasn't a made guy. Or, you know, for instance, the whole Michael Francis thing now with Norby Walters, who recently passed away. If you basically, per the rules, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but per the rules, if you made existence to it in any way, shape, form, or fashion, that's it.
You can't even listen to me. They know the deal. You can't even talk. You can't even tell a police officer that kid took a piece of candy.
Right.
You know what I'm trying to say? There's no such thing as that. When you're involved in that lifestyle, and that there's such set rules, no social media, none of this stuff. When you're really in that stuff, there's none of that. There's no talking. There's no nothing. It's you're this way or that way. What they're doing is they're being half-assed crooks. They're lying, basically. They're trying to tell you, oh, I didn't put anybody in jail. You're on the internet and you're talking about crimes. They're going to label you no good.
Right.
No one's recognizing you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Back to that arson. How exactly did that finalize?
Basically, Vin had a guy in the Gambino family that runs plates for us. So he got the address. The guy lived in Broad Channel. And I appointed Little Gotti and Fat Matt to come with me. What happened was, though, you know, we got caught setting that car on fire. We were on a high-speed chase. Yeah.
You got caught or you got away, didn't you?
We got away. I'm saying, but we got caught in the act doing it.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
It was undercover looking at it.
You jumped out the car?
Things are flames. Yeah. We went on a high-speed chase. Little guy didn't stop. That's why I knew he was good. We took off on this cop on a high-speed chase for fucking 10 minutes.
And when you jumped out, they didn't chase him. They chased you?
We got lucky because there was only one cop in the car. So he might have thought I was jumping out with something on me maybe.
Yeah.
So he just came after me and then they got away. If there was two people in the car, he would have let one out the car to chase me on foot
and then
chase the car down. So I got the car away because when I tuck and rolled out, they chased me. He chased me.
I got you. You mentioned earlier that, you know, you were expecting to be made. I mean, was that a conversation that you had with Vinny? And was it a situation where they were waiting for the books to open up?
They're not the books to open up, but it's like this. Ronnie was on federal probation, so when you become a member, you automatically go on the list. Once they go on his list, I can't go near him no more.
Right.
That's it. I was with him 24/7, but he was already saying, like, Vin was pushing for me because Vin knew he was getting locked up because his cousin had a wire on Gaspar for 3 years.
Right.
And he had found out and he came to me. He says, Gene, I got to get you in now or you're going to be stuck. He goes, we're all going to get locked up. I says, what do you mean? I says, we'll go to Ronnie. I says, I can't go. He goes, I went to Ronnie. Ronnie says, I need him in the street right now for me. Just wait a little while. I'll get him done. Just wait. And, you know, obviously that aggravated me that I had to wait, but Ronnie didn't want me on his list. That was the big problem.
You made a Instagram post not too long ago, and I'll get into a little bit more detail of that here in a little bit, but you talked about an instance where one of your friends got shot in the neck.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Yeah. My friend Danny Crocker, one of my best friends. Me and Chris Cagnata, before we were enemies, we had beat up a kid named Phil Galena and cracked a bottle over his head back in 2005. And we didn't know that Phil Galena 3 weeks later was going to pay Albanians to kill us. And that's what he did. And they took the money. We went into a nightclub. I told this story a few times. They watched us. When we left onto the highway, they fired into the car, trying to shoot me and Chris. But they shot my innocent friend through the neck and my other friend in the back. That's what happened. It was a botched hit on us, and they shot my innocent friend.
And he killed him?
No, he survived. We don't know how he survived. It literally missed everything right as much. It went through his throat completely.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And
his neck was this big. It was crazy looking.
What was the, I guess, retaliation that you're allowed to talk about?
Oh, yeah. We didn't stop. But he literally had to sell his home. I went to his house with a Tech-9. I shot his whole house up with everybody in it because the reason why I did that is because he did a gang member move, and I was told, you do whatever you want now. They want to play games like that. Show them we can do the same. And that's what I did. I terrorized him because he was hiding. We tried to kill his brother. I was waiting for his brother outside of the we had a drop on his brother. His brother, I tried to shoot him with a shotgun. We shot up his whole house twice. Forget it. We blew up all his cars. We made him leave. He had to leave.
Jeez. Was it nighttime or daytime when you shot up the house?
Nighttime.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Any other, like, big – the name you just mentioned, Cagnata?
Yeah, he shot my house up, Chris Cagnata.
I was about to say, I've heard that – I know you two were friends at one time, but then you kind of became enemies. I've heard you say, and I think it might have been the interview you did with Jeff, but that was one of the toughest kids that was around.
He is the toughest kid. He was the toughest kid. He was. There was nobody like him. We call him the perfect weapon. That's what he was.
And this is just with his hands? I mean, just a physical guy?
Just brutal. You just couldn't do nothing with him, man. You got to shoot him, you know? And if you – literally, you have to use a weapon with this kid. I mean, it's just going to massacre you. You know what I mean?
It's one of them guys. There's no choice.
Yeah. And then he'll go to weapons, too. That was the fucked up part. You know, he does both.
What was the closest you ever come to being killed?
Oh, my God. that and in the car in front of my, they tried to kill me about four times. It was four attempts in my life. And everybody always got shot. They always missed me and shot everybody else. And they were trying to get me.
Probably about want to hang out with you.
Yeah. And my house was bad, man. He put 30 bullets into my house, in my bedroom, everything. I watched the bullets go right into, they were going over my head.
Are you living alone at this point?
Oh, my whole family was in the house.
Jeez.
Yeah, he was mad. I shot him. So he was, you know, a little upset about that.
I can see where he'd be a little upset.
Yeah.
Where'd you shoot him?
You know, we lived, you know, we lived the cowboy era. We were the last of the hurrah. That's why, you know, I'm so popular, because we were the last of the bad guys, the real ones. We were still doing old school shit, but we operated differently.
It was breaking into the, breaking into new school,
but we weren't born with an iPhone. We were still old school, playing stickball in the street, you know, running around. Still that 80s mentality. Right. You know what I mean? Because the 90s kids were still horrific. You know, the most of the kids that were born in the 70s, they were all killers that were living in the 90s. Right. You know, coming up in their heyday was the 90s. Our heyday was the early 2000s. It was still bad. You know what I mean? Now it's completely washed up. The mob is completely dead. It's no more of that, you know?
You mentioned, you know, dressing different. What was the fashion at that time? What were people wearing at that time, just out of curiosity?
Well, we didn't wear suits. You know, we didn't wear, like, we wore Fila Velours, you know. For me, I dressed a little bit like a rapper. They used to get mad. They didn't like that. We had like different swag, you know, listening to rap music, you know, the whole thing was a little different.
It's funny, that transition. I think there was a line that I always got a kick out of in The Sopranos, when he's like, guys today, they want to be buried in their tracksuits. But those tracksuits, man, they were popular like everywhere. They were popular everywhere, especially in that time frame you're talking about.
Anishi sweatsuits, Sean John sweatsuits, you know, that's what our era was wearing. And then, you know, also like wearing, like, you know, Dior's, Gucci, all that stuff. To the old timers, we look like, you know, assholes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What about Averex? Was that popular around that time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, all of that stuff. That's funny. We dressed like kids in the hood almost, but we talk the way we talk. So we had these strong accents, but we dressed like gang members almost. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Ultimately, you would wind up getting arrested. And I'm not sure if you got arrested a few times before the one where you did eventually decide to cooperate, but the one where you cooperated, what was the arrest? What was it for? What were you facing?
They had me in the state on a conspiracy to selling guns, armed robbery, you name it, I had it. And then Florida had me on conspiracy to a jewelry store robbery, armed robbery. And then the feds were coming down on conspiracy to commit murder, attempted murder, arsons, you just name it, just a laundry list of crimes. They were investigating us for years, and they were finally just, it was our turn. You know what they say?
Yeah.
And you were going down to Florida? And you find out, listen, do you think they're not watching you? My ass, they're only watching you. And they're letting you come out, you stay out there for 5-6 years. Oh, I'm good. They come with a 15,000 page wiretap indictment.
Jeez.
15,000 pages. 15,000 pages. I was 2,200. I had the 15,000. Okay. Wow.
And you were going to Florida and being involved in some of that stuff?
Yeah, we were, like I said, we were just wild kids, you know?
And when you do that, I mean, did you have somebody down there? Was there a family down there, or you just went and did it?
No, we were just looking for, you know, opportunity, you know, easier opportunity.
Well, how do you find that in Florida, I guess is the question.
I'm a pro.
So you would go down there and scout this out. It wasn't somebody that would call you up and say, hey, Gene, I got the score. Come on down here. We can do it.
Yes. Well, that was usually, okay. But I also would do my own homework on things.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, you know, if you're going to rob someone, you're going to do your own homework on it. But I mean, you had people that would turn you on, I guess, to jobs and scores.
This is what the mafia grew up on, stealing. Yeah. That's how they survived their whole lives. You know, everyone says, oh, this is organized crime was based on taking, not giving. They take, you know what I'm saying? They're extorting you, robbing you. That's what we're built off of. You know what I mean? Right. So when they say certain crimes are more worse, no, they're not. This is what they're built off of. We were just thugs.
Right.
You know what I mean? That wore suits.
So you're facing how many years? What, life? 100 years?
Oh, God, who knows? Who knows? I was a predicate persistent. I was going to get career arms acted. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. At what point did you decide that you were going to cooperate?
19 months in.
What? I mean, that's a decent stretch inside before you decide.
In Rikers Island. In Rikers Island.
Yeah, Rikers Island is not a easy place. If I'm not mistaken, I think Lilo Brancato, that's where he went.
Yeah. I was in the worst houses, in the worst building, high classification, fighting every day, knife fight, all kinds of shit you could think of. I did it for 19 months. And then I finally said, fuck this. I says, all right, they don't want to pay my federal attorney. I don't want to do this or that. All right. You know what? They're going to let me die like this? Cool. I says, I'm good.
So that was the point. That's what I'm getting at. It was more or less like the breaking point was they're not trying to pay for you an attorney to fight this.
Yeah. They was kept saying when it goes federal, we'll pay it. I says, that's bullshit. I says, what do you got to wait for? I says, it's going federal. My lawyer told me that they're coming. They're coming. Go get me a Barry Levin. Go get me a fucking big shot guy. 350, you know, these lawyers are 350,000, these federal attorneys.
Oh, yeah.
200,000. They're huge money. You know, I'm going to be, I know I got big boy crimes. I need a real attorney. I can't have no flake. You know what I'm saying? No jerk off. I need, you know, they're coming with some big shit on me.
Yeah, this is not something you want to go into with a damn public defender or somebody that don't really understand what's what.
Right.
But 19 months in is a decent amount of time before you decide to flip. Were you prepared to do, had they paid it, had they went, paid the money, gave you the legal, you went, you got, just say you got life. Were you prepared to do life in prison?
Yeah. So when I was really about that, I was about that. But you know what the funny thing is that I was trying to take 20 years the whole time. They wouldn't do it. I was trying to take a 20 flat the whole time for everything. They said, there's no way you're going to get that. Is that sick?
So they're trying, they're wanting to put you away for life. Yeah.
It's either you're going to do this or you're not seeing the street again.
And did they have names like who they wanted, or they just pretty much gave you a pen and told you to get to write? And how did that work?
No, they know. They've been watching you for years. They know what's what and who's who. You can't even lie to them. Don't sit there and waste their time. They know everything already. You're just co-signing.
Yeah, you're co-signing on it. You're kind of the nail in the coffin, so to speak. Like with Sammy, they knew the target was obviously John Gotti.
I mean, you know my cousin wore a wire on me for 2 years.
I had heard you mention that, yeah.
Right. My cousin had a wire on. I had multiple cooperators against me, lots of loan shark victims against me. You know, I was wearing everything. Because I was the guy that was in Front Street. Mm-hmm. I was the one doing all the collections, all the violence. So I'm out there. I'm the one going into people's businesses, dragging them out, they owe money. I'm the one all over these wire taps, body taps, car taps. So I'm the front man. I'm the one that's going to hold everything down. You know, I'm looking at the asshole full time. These guys are facing 5 years. I got that in the box. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're facing baby time. You know, all little extortion, little loan shark, and you get 36 months. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking at 36-year cop-out, 40-year cop-out. You know what I'm saying? It was a whole different ball game, you know?
After you did cooperate, you signed, I'm assuming, signed the agreement or whatever, how much more time did you have to do?
I did a total of 6 years.
Total of 6 years. So even after you started a cooperation a little
longer. Oh, they don't want, not with my violence. No, you know. Remember, I was a suspect in 2 murders. And, you know, a guy in jail had died next to me and they were trying to say that I killed the guy. It was a whole nightmare. You know,
did you have to plead to those murders?
No, I did not because they were trying to pin me on, they were trying to accuse me of one, something that happened also back in the day with me and my partner, Bobby, and they were blaming me for something, but I was not lying. I just told them we weren't responsible for it. And they kept saying they thought that we were basically.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and they kept on saying, well, you know, your name's coming up in everything. I was taking subcontracts. You know, I helped Frankie try to kill a guy in the Bronx. You know, I was doing things for other families. You know what I mean? So my name was just all over the place.
Right. Ultimately, what was it? Ronnie got time off that. How did it sit with you knowing that he was going to go away? I mean, did you have reservations about it all? Did it make you upset? Was it just fuck it? It is what it is.
Well, he was going away regardless. I mean, Ricky Kessa had a wire on. I mean, he was like, I was the last one. Remember, I was the last guy on the pole. Everyone, that thing was already built, that case. That case was already done. You know, I just co-signed a lot of the violence.
Right. But nothing with Vinny?
Yeah. Yeah. With Vin, a lot with Vin. But, you know, remember, he was old. They just lost that Latanza case. It was the biggest upset in the Eastern District history of a court.
Right. I was looking at that.
More media attention than any mob case ever in the history of the mafia. So they just came up with that loss. So they were nervous. They just wanted him to cop out.
Okay.
They didn't want to go to trial. They just wanted, because they were going to charge him with RICO assaults and acts and all this. And they just said, listen, give him the arson, give him a 0-20, let him cop out. And that's what he did. You know, they could have hammed him. They could have hammered him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you get out, do you go right back home?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was driving a freaking Porsche. It was fucking nuts.
Did you not at this point? And now by then things are different. Like there are a number of people that have cooperated. I don't know if Messina had cooperated this time, but I mean, you've even got bosses of the families cooperating, let alone, you know, people down the ladder. So it's not, I don't want to say accepted, socially accepted, but it's a lot more normal than, you know, say 20 or 30 years prior. Did you have any reservations of going back to the same area that you come from, knowing that some of these guys had been put away
20, 30 years ago? I wouldn't have done that no matter what.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, it's so washed
20
up
30
now,
years ago, you'd have probably got killed holding up some of these people.
Listen, 20, 30 years ago, I wouldn't exist.
Exactly.
I would have been killed 19 times. I say it all the time.
I had Anthony Aralato on the show one time, and he was like, if I'd have done, you know, what I did years prior, he's like, they'd have never found my body. He's like, I would have never made
same
it.
Thing. Yeah. I would have got, they made me meet them in a funeral parlor basement one time for something I did. And back in the day, I just never would have left it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You'd have went up under whoever was getting buried, and they'd have never found
100%. Yeah.
But you didn't have any reservations about going back to your neighborhood? None at all?
Nah. I was like that. You know what I mean? I hate to say it, and I hate to be like that, but I was like, I was no slouch, bro. I'm not a guy you could just walk up to and just say, oh, you know what I mean?
But in the back of your mind, you had to know that it's possible somebody somewhere, you know, maybe not necessarily coming up and want to test you physically, but they could be waiting somewhere with a pistol and just shoot you.
So you want to know the truth, and anyone that really knows me, you know what I love?
What?
You know what my favorite thing in the world is?
What?
Beef. Trauma. I live off it. You know what I'm saying? That was my thing. I loved it. It kept me going. You know what I mean? That's just who I was.
Well, it keeps
I was
you
an
sharp.
Adrenaline junkie.
It does keep you sharp. You have to be sharp.
Yeah, absolutely. I lived for it. That's true. That's the truth. Just being honest with you, man. That's why.
You got hooked up with John Alight, and you guys done the Johnny and Gene show, which was great. Yeah. It was one of the first mob shows that I actually started watching on YouTube.
The first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great, but there was a problem. Like, you weren't allowed to be around him. What was the dynamic like with that?
Nah. So they use that as an excuse. The government was just mad that I was making money off talking about hurting people and, you know, glorifying it, and people looking at us like we're rock stars. Right. And, you know, Johnny and Gene show accumulated millions of views. We were huge. We had other guys coming on the show. They were getting violated for coming on the show. Then we had Rubio on. That was in the newspaper, the Daily News, that he came on. They put him back in jail. So it started, I was on federal probation. They still could own me. So they used it as an excuse to get me off the show.
Okay, so that was what I was getting at. You were still on federal probation doing that. So you're not allowed to hang out with other felons.
Yeah, they take your stuff, your jewelry. If you listen, they own you. Literally, if you have a $30,000 chain and you can't show for it, they'll take it. Mm-hmm. They'll take your jewelry. They own you. Legitimately, they own you. You have no rights when you're on federal probation.
And if anybody looks up the Johnny and Gene show now, I mean, lots of videos on there, hundreds of thousands of views, probably, you know, in the millions if you tally them all.
Millions, millions.
You know, it's a shame that got taken down, but I mean, I guess they were trying to treat it as like you guys were, you know, breaking like the Son of Sam law, where you're not allowed to try to profit over your crimes. But that's for movies, though. I don't know how you can put that on YouTube.
We paved the way for the shows because I took the heat. I took the heat, and everybody got this show. But at first, I took the heat. They came down on me like a shitstorm. This ain't going to be tolerated. Now everyone does it. I just took the blunt hit of it. I went to jail. They put me in jail three times. You know what I mean? So, you know.
Year before last, you decided to move down to Tampa. What prompted that move?
Business opportunity. Right. And I had people down here.
Right. You go down there, you do, as we mentioned earlier, towards the beginning of the show, you violate, you go in, you're in there for what, 6 months?
The first time? First violation?
Yeah.
First violation was 4 months and 6 months house arrest, and they restarted my probation.
Okay.
Nailed me.
But the more recent one that you were in there, you were in there with Sam Fried?
Sam Bankman, I was with Fetty Wap. I was with the Attorney General of Mexico. I was with the President of Honduras. Yeah, a few of them.
So you're in a different unit, I'm assuming.
Yeah, high profile.
You knew Fetty Wap? I mean, like, you recognized him?
Every day I hung out. I was working out with him. Yeah, awesome dude.
Yeah.
Great guy, Fetty Wap. Real cool, friendly guy.
Mm-hmm. What is he looking at time-wise?
They gave him 6 years.
Okay.
That's not bad. He had a 5 to 40. They gave him 6 years, 25, conspiracy to 25 bricks. a Coke.
You got an interesting little story with Sam. Tell us a little bit about that, how that came to be, and you know what you done for him in there. Because I like that story. You know, as a lot of people want to paint you, you know, as a lot of different things. And obviously, you self admitted you were a wild fucking kid. You've done a lot of fucked up shit. But I like the story that you told of what you done to help Sam. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when he first came in, people were already plotting on him. You know, like basically, like they were going to try to friendly extort him. Should I say?
Right. Kind of like Madoff.
Yeah, so they were trying to make it like it was scary in there. Like, oh, we got to be careful. You got to pay someone. It's dangerous in here. So the kid that was trying to get him kept on seeing Sam Bankman come talk to me and my friends in my section. So he was trying to – he pulled Sam Bankman in the back. So he was trying to like – how can I say friendly exhort him? Like trying to say, yo, you got – he kept coming to us. Yo, stop telling him it's good in here because we're trying to get money out of him. I says, bro, I'm not doing that. I said, I'm going to tell him this is a harmless place. I'm not doing that. So what ends up happening is that Sam Bankman – was by me talking, and the kid Juice seen it, and he went to his section. He called me and Sam over. He called us over, and he's like, "Yo, don't talk." Trying to make it like no one could talk to him, like you know, no one's allowed to talk to him. Like that's his guy. Like he owns him or something. You know what I mean? And he got nasty. And I says, "Yo, who the fuck you talking to like that?" And then that was it. We just started going at it. Like I wasn't having it. He was trying to like make me make it like it's scary in here, so he could do his little extortion bullshit on him. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't doing that. The guy's harmless, bro. He doesn't know where he is, you know? Right. First time in prison, he was like a punk, you know, picking on a homeless dude. So I wasn't with that. And I ended up beating the kid up and going to the hole, you know?
And they didn't press on that anymore? You didn't get any extra charges on that, I'm assuming? I know they were close.
They had it as a 224. I have the ticket as an assault. They had it written down as an assault. And then the feds just kicked it back. I got lucky because I hit him with hot coffee.
Oh, shit. You hit him with hot coffee?
I hit him with hot coffee. That's an assault with a weapon.
Right. Did you ever speak with Sam after that?
No, I went home from the hole.
Wow.
I did 80 days in that motherfucker.
And you credit a judge for really kind of helping you out and giving you a break. Cause I mean, you've caught a lot of breaks, man. You're like a fucking cat with the lives. I mean, I didn't even know you had been shot at that many times earlier. Now with the arrest and the life sentences, I mean, you know, they could have really hammered down or he could have really hammered down on you. Why do you think he gave you, you know, he cut you a break?
Judge Block. Funny. I never met somebody with my birthday, June 6th. He has the same birthday as me. So me and this guy, I don't know what is he wrote. He had books out. I had books out. It was just, I think he took a liking into me and kind of seen that I wasn't the person I used to be because he was the judge on my case. Mm-hmm. So he knows my, what I was about. So if I'm coming in front of you with this nonsense, you're going to give me 5 years for this petty bullshit? And right. Look what I used to be. This is what you're going to give me? So they kept on trying to have me, and he kept saying, he's just not who he used to be. I'm not going to give this kid and take him out over podcasts and nonsense and little bar fights. You know, they were lying. In paperwork, they were saying I went into a bar and pulled a gun out on somebody. I never did that. I went into a bar and yelled at somebody. They turned it into I went and pulled a gun out. Because they got to what? They got to make me look like a gangster so he could say, okay, he's being his old self. I'm going to give him 5 years.
Right.
But he wasn't buying it. So Judge Block kept on taking my side. They were literally asking for 3-4 years. He said 90 days. They were furious. Do it. He would not hurt me. He just wouldn't do it. He just liked me.
Yeah, you're painted a lot, especially, I don't know if you want to call it mob tube or whatever. I don't really classify my show as in that. I do interview mob guys, but like, they all the time classify you, woman beater comes up quite a lot. But it seems like to me, you just have the typical dysfunctional relationships, shall I call it? But because it's you, it's always going to go to the next level. What do you say to the people that call you that?
I got stabbed. That's what I could say. I was stabbed. Okay, that's all you got to know. Everybody knows. Anybody that knows that situation laughs about that when they say I was beating. No, I was getting beat. Do you really believe that the state of Florida thought I was doing that? I'd be out right now talking with you.
Yeah.
You know how strict Florida is? You know how bad Florida is? Things? If they really thought that they were saying these bullshit things, I would be, they'd give me 10 years for something like that with my record.
I got a question too, and you've went on some shows in the past. You know, you've went on guys that you don't necessarily get along with now. What do you think when somebody has you on a show, and you agree to go on? They interview you, they get your story, they're nice to you on the show, but then a week, a month, 2 months later, they're bad mouthing the fuck out of you right after that. What, I mean, how does that, I don't get that. I don't get why you would have someone on and then right after that, especially if it's a good interview and then right after that, you bash them.
Because they get a lot of phone calls from the areas and they're saying, oh, why are you making this kid look good? Making them look, because they want them to make him look bad. They don't want you to give the truth. They don't want you to make me look like what I was. They want to make you look bad. So these guys will have to do that because they get threatened. Or they'll say, oh, you're a fucking scumbag. You're making this kid look good. That's what they do. Like Jeff the Dude, me and him are friends. I talk to him all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's all bullshit. If he's just a journalist. He could say whatever he wants, you know, on his show. But deep down, he calls me. We're buddies. You know what I mean? So that's like, you know, that's just a little podcast bullshit, you know?
What's your relationship with Lee Cole?
No, that's me. He's, I don't know. It's so weird. I couldn't even tell you.
Because I've seen you on his show before. You had an interview. Maybe it might have been a year ago.
That was my buddy. Me and him were buddies.
Yeah.
And then he just, you know, he just flipped, you know, he's a flip flopper. He does that a lot.
He had a great interview with Bill Cotolo. I thought the interview was good. It was when Danny was still on his show. And I know that whole debacle, but like, I thought that interview with Bill was great. And then right after that, they were bashing the man.
Well, I told Lee that he would make it in this business. That was over two years ago. I told him when I was used to talk to him on the phone, you're going to make it. And sure enough, you know, he did. He made it. I knew he would.
Yeah. He's good. I mean, I've actually been on a show before. He's interviewed me because some situations that I was into. So he's good. And he's got an interesting backstory too, as far as his brother and all that and the stuff that he was involved in with the WWE Ringboy scandal and all that stuff.
Well, think about it. You want to be friends with someone like me, because when you're, let's say in your business, you call me and say, hey, Gene, I need to know about this guy, so-and-so. I know everybody. I came up with all these guys, so they don't know these people.
Right.
So you're going to call me about Chris Cagnata. They don't know a clue about Chris Cagnata. I was with the kid every day before I shot him. We're friends. You know, there's so much stuff I could give them about people where they don't know that stuff. It's like being a consultant almost. And you don't want to be an enemy.
That's a key.
You know what I'm saying? So a lot of these guys say, why be enemies with Gene when he was a modern day guy that was knew everybody?
Yeah.
So you don't want to really mess that up, you know?
That is key, because it's hard for, especially from a guy like me, I'm not from New York. I'm from South Carolina. You know, so it's hard for me to quote unquote vet some people in their stories. I have to rely on, they're going to tell, or at least be honest with me when they come on here. Obviously I can't stop somebody from lying, but I can't go and fucking hire a PI to investigate. I'm not Vlad TV. You know, I'm not CNN. And I feel like nowadays with technology and the way you can search shit, if you outright lie about big shit, it's going to come out, you know,
absolutely.
So you would think you would be smarter to do that, but hey, people do it a lot. So the current landscape right now, you know, the big names in YouTube, you got Francis, you got Sammy the Bull, you don't have your own show, but you garner views. Like your name, you know, gets views. And a lot lately, because you've been
more than anybody, except for two names. I beat everybody out in views. Everybody knows that, except for two people. And I don't even have a show.
Yeah. And that's what's so crazy about this. But the beef lately is with you and Joey Merlino.
Yeah.
To start with, I want to ask this before we get into it. What do you think about Joey having his own show? Where does that sit? You've said it before on your own thing, but as far as this platform, where does that sit with you about him having a show, being that it does talk about stuff other than sports?
It's he knows what he's doing. He's no good. You know what I'm saying? That's what he's going to be labeled. He can say whatever he wants. And, you know, once you sit on that YouTube stuff and you do that, no one's recognized you ever again as a wise guy. Mm-hmm. The mafia is very easy. One little thing you do and you're tarnished. You could be the best guy for 40 years. You do one wrong thing, you're no good no more. Yeah. And that's exactly what he did. He was a good gangster for 30, 40 years. He has a YouTube show. He's no good no more. That's it. It's that simple. You know what I'm saying? He can say whatever he wants. Talk these blue in the face. He can say, I'm at Rayo's. Great. I can go into Rayo's. I don't give a fuck. Like, no one's doing nothing no more. Like, you know, you're not proving nothing by going into Rayo's or going to these places. There's nothing going on no more, Joey. It gets washed up. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. I mean, seem like that. And obviously, I'm sure things go on. I think everything's a move now more behind the scenes.
Violence is gone.
See about, the violence is gone. And I mean, I'm not saying people still wouldn't get killed. I mean, but, you know, I think, what was the guy from the Gambino's not too long ago, but that was like an isolated incident. I think the kid was off his fucking rocker and shit.
That had nothing to do with it was just a nut job.
Yeah, it wasn't even like gangland violence. I think Canada right now, there's a lot of shit going on in Canada you might have to worry about.
They're bad. Yeah. Well, they're bad. Yeah, they're still bad. But remember, they don't have RICO acts out there.
Right.
They don't have the RICO law in Canada. That's why they do all that shit. If they had RICO, they wouldn't be doing that shit.
Right.
Tell you that much.
You made mention in the little tirade that you went on not too long ago, and you talked about New York, and you're like, you're the boss of New York is the equivalent of like a soldier, or the boss of Philly, excuse me, is like the equivalent of a soldier here in New York. Break that down, because obviously Philly has got a, it's really an interesting story, that whole history from Bruno to Phil Testa to Scarfo.
They're like the bottom of the barrel. I'm not to be mean and insult them. They're like little, corners. They're nothing. Just 50, at one time, they had like 40 members in total. We have that in one neighborhood. I'm saying the Philadelphia family is always ran by another New York family. So you're not the boss. You're just a captain in your area. So you're basically working for the Genovese family. That's who they work for. So basically, he's not a boss. He's a soldier in the Genovese family, you could say, if you want. I mean, he's not labeled that. He'll be the boss of Philly, but in actuality, he answers to New York. They're like a small, you know, little crew. Mm-hmm. And the New York told him, you run this, but you answer to us. So you're not really a boss. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does a boss answer to anybody?
No, not typically.
No. Why are you asking New York for permission if you're a boss?
Because I know when Bruno got killed, I think the guys that did that, they wound up getting taken out by some New York guys. I think Anthony Caponegro, I think it was, and another guy. So like anything that's done over there, murder-wise or whatever, does it have to run through New York? Or did? Not absolutely. Does, but did.
Absolutely. Everything goes to them. Absolutely.
Would you rank them above the decavs out of New Jersey?
I mean, it's no different. I mean, it's basically New York's the motherland and everybody else branches off them.
Farm team, you want to go?
Yeah, they're like a little farm system. Like I said, Philadelphia is very small, bro. They have one captain for like the whole. I'm saying, come on, bro.
So would you say that? I'll go back before this beef between you and him in Joey's prime, after he won the war with Stanfa, would he be respected in New York?
Absolutely. No, he was definitely a gangster, but I'm saying like, they talk about this war, like it was like this, I mean, that's like, I don't know, whatever, you know, I'm not going to minimize it, but you know, they make it like, you know, this big war. What was it? A 4-on-4 shootout? I mean, it's not a lot of guys. I was locked up with these Philly guys, with the guys that were killing people. And they said it was like 18 people, like in one crew, and then versus like another like 10 people. You know what I'm saying?
It was essentially the old guard and the new guard. I mean, John Stanfa and his guys against Joey. I think they dubbed him like the Young Turks or some name.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have the shootouts like on the streets and stuff like that when they shot up John.
We were all doing that,
son.
Though.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all doing that. I was doing that. It doesn't mean that, you know. Yeah, Joey Millino definitely had his, you know, his work that he put in. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, they were a very small little group. You know, he's a boss of Philly. And when you're a New York guy, you look down upon them. I'm just being honest with you. Right. We look at them as like, you know, the small, like the little crew over there. You know what I mean? Not like New York.
Now, you brought up, you went personal on this one.
I did. Yeah.
Why?
Because he keeps running his mouth and he keeps saying that he's going to do this and do that. And he's coming at all the rats and all this stuff. So let's talk about your dirty laundry, because you're bringing up, you know, all this stuff. You know, if you're so feared and respected, why would people be disrespecting you like that?
When did you first hear about those things?
I know. I actually know people.
These are some of the sports people that you're talking about. And if you want to elaborate, you know, feel free. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have seen your Instagram, but if you want to detail what exactly you're talking about.
I mean, when he was in jail, people were sleeping with his wife.
And then you detailed another guy that you said, you know, people wouldn't even look at his wife.
Right. They wouldn't even glance at her, bro. That's respect. That's fear. When you're in jail, but trying to get with your wife, how much do they respect you and fear you? They can't. It don't make sense.
Do you feel that was over the line, or you don't even care about the line?
I have no line. That's why that's why people don't bother me in this genre. I have no line. I only get worse. It'll only get worse. I have no boundaries.
Do you think this gets worse?
If he continues, I got some more stuff. It's going to get worse. It's going to get bad. You know, I'm a habitual line crosser. I don't have a line. It's just, Like, oh, that's why everyone calls me, you know, the way. The reason why I'm so popular in this stuff is because I say what I feel. I don't sugarcoat shit. I tell people how it is and what it is. There's no sugarcoating with me. Mm-hmm.
If you were, because you're, I mean, you're in Tampa. Joey spends some time in Boca. I mean, I know he bounces
right now I'm in New York.
Right now. Okay.
Right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. And he bounces around a little bit too. But say, coincidentally, you two guys were to bump into each other.
Right.
What happens?
So I'm a very confrontational, hands-on person. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not just talking because I sound good. Even out here to this day in Tampa, wherever I go, I'm very confrontational. No one's going to abuse me. No one's going to punk me. It's just not my vocabulary. It don't happen. I don't care what I did in my life. That's just who I am as a person. He's 62 years old. He's 120 pounds. That would be the biggest mistake of his life if he ever tried to get nasty with me or confrontational with me, because I will slap him right where I see him. It's no negotiating. He's going to hit me back. We're going to fight. That's all it's going to be. There's going to be no one way. Me running is going to be what it is. There's nothing. I don't care about titles and names. I don't care about that. That means nothing to me at all. It never did. So if he ever did bump into me and he ever did say something slick, I will assault him. It's that simple. There's no denying that. There's no like sugarcoating that.
What if he doesn't say anything? What if he sees you? Not even acknowledge you.
Then we'll go about our way. If he does anything slick or tries to do anything slick, I will make a mockery out of him and his partner. Literally.
And by partner, I'm assuming you're talking about Snuff.
Snuffleupagus. Yeah.
Who do you consider the top guy in this genre right now that you listen to? Let me start with that question. Do you listen to anybody in this genre?
No. I only watch things here and there, like to see what's going on. I really don't have a set thing. The top guy would be Sammy.
You think Sammy? Why Sammy over? Is it? I know why I would say Sammy, because he's going to be more of the details. You know what I'm saying?
Not only that, look at the things that he was a part of.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Sammy too.
You can't take that from him. There's nothing that anyone could take from him. He's just too much a part of history and the status that he was at. It's just like,
he's tied to Gotti forever.
Listen, I like Mike Francis now. I never sugarcoat nothing. When I first came in this genre, I was bashing him. I was going at him because he was trying to say he wasn't a cooperator, which he was. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he didn't want, you know, I was the one that brought that out. I wouldn't stop. I'm like, bro, you're lying. Like, you sat. Like, we don't want to hear shit. So to me, he was not a hands-on guy. He was more of just like a money guy and born around it and got in because of his dad.
He said that.
I think he would have even been a gangster if he wasn't for his dad. You know, so like I said, he's a cool guy. I definitely would sit with him, but I'll never change my opinion. I don't – Sammy was a street guy, gangster, status, killed 19 people, whole different league, underboss, killed Paul Castellano. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a whole different ball game here, bro.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So – you know, he'll be number one.
Yeah, he's admitted that he would consider himself more of a racketeer than a gangster, which I think is an accurate assessment of his involvement.
Yes. Yeah, he does admit it. Now he does. Yeah, I'm saying, now like, you does. Know, when me and Johnny, when I first came on the scene, there was nobody. It was just me, him, and Johnny.
Right.
That's it. That's it. That's all it really was. There's nobody else, really.
Joey brought up Sonny Francis. Now, I mean, anybody that I've talked to that dealt with or had any relations with Sonny Francis.
How can a little Philly crumb bring up Sonny Francis? How could he even have the balls, the audacity to bring up a legend, a guy that's probably one of the most toughest, feared, respected men ever in that life? Are you serious? This little Joey Molino, this little actor.
Michael has told the story before that, you know, when they thought he was skimming from the gas, that Sonny had all but said to Persico, like, if you got to take him out, you got to take him out. Like, basically signed his death warrant. And he's not Michael's actual father, right?
No, he is.
Is it biological?
He is. Yes, he is.
Okay.
He is.
Mm-hmm. But he had all but basically said he could take him out. But now
the guy was a gangster. Yeah.
But the thing I don't necessarily co-sign on with Joey, and obviously he's free to make his own opinion, but like, the guy got out when he was 90 fucking nine.
More, I think. I think it was like 100-something.
I want to say it was 99 or 100 when he got out. He lived to be 103, so he lived 3 years.
Yeah.
You ain't got a lot of choices when you're fucking 100 years old.
Come on.
You ain't got a lot of time left either, let's be honest. But you ain't got a lot of choices when you're 100 years old.
Listen, what Joey's doing is what I taught people. You know what sells in this business? Controversy.
Yeah.
They want the problems. And I told everybody that if you want to make it, they love the controversy. That's what he's doing. He knows with me it's going to be controversy. So that's why he's doing this, because it's going to be a lot of views. Because they know my mouth. I'm foul. I'm disrespect. Controversy. Everything with me was always controversy. That's what I was known for. I tell people, fuck you, that I start cursing. I don't care. He knows that. So what he's doing, he's coming at Mike Francis, what I did at first. He knows what's going to bring. Oh, now he's talking about his father. It's all controversy. It's drawing everybody to him. Yo, Joey's the foul mouth of this thing. Look what he's saying. That's the reputation I had. Just saying what we want, do what we want. That's what he's doing. He knows Sonny Francis ain't no rat.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But he's doing it to draw the views.
Yeah. I mean, controversy equals cash. That's a saying as old as time.
It's all it is. It's all it is, bro.
Couple more questions and then we'll wrap it up. What do you have? You did write a book. Let's mention that. When did you write that book?
Yeah. 2018.
And you done it with who, Romano?
I did it with Teddy DiBattoro at first.
Okay.
He blew up the Chicken Man Philly Testa.
Yeah. He put the bomb up under his porch.
Yeah. That's what I wrote it with originally.
Really?
And then, and then I came out and redid it with Lou Romano.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that, I'm assuming that's available pretty much everywhere. You can get your books, Amazon, everywhere.
Bestseller. It's a bestseller, man.
Right. Yeah. What's the name of it so everybody can go search it?
Born in the Life.
Born in the Life. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have any future plans? I've heard you kind of allude to possible, I want to say entertainment situations. I don't want to get too deep in it. I don't know what you can say, but I mean, do you have any plans going forward to do anything like that? Do you have any plans for a reunite with A-Lot? I mean,
yes,
you are a very good draw to this industry.
Right.
People can say whatever they want about you in this whole, in life in general. If you're charismatic, you're going to get views, you're going to get looks, you're going to get, however the subscribers or whatever, there's a market for you. What is your plans with that?
I have such an advantage. I'm 39 years old. I was modern day. I'm the only modern day real guy that was out here running around like, nuts and have all these stories and attached to big people. And it's like the perfect storm for me. And they really want to do something big with me because it's not about the old school. It's about the new stuff. Mm-hmm. There's no shows about the new stuff and everything. And people are just really interested and really about to do that, should I say?
Yeah.
So I have a lot of things going on right now. I'm supposed to be in a real Hollywood film, not a big part, but I'm supposed to be in a real film with Johnny A-Light. He's going to be in a film and they're going to put me in some, a part with it. And that's the opportunities that I had. I ruined that by getting in trouble on those violations. I was already going that route. I had a agent and everything doing everything, a guy that helps you get into, TV shows and things like that. And I ruined that by kept getting in trouble. Another Johnny and Gene show, we're thinking about coming back and sitting down again. We already filmed some stuff, but now we want to do it where we're sitting down together and do it right the right way.
Okay. There's a guy, everybody seems to, and which is correct, they hang their hat that Joey, is the only person on YouTube that never cooperated. That's not 100% accurate.
All right.
There's another guy that's on YouTube. Now, he doesn't talk about mob content. He talks strictly sports, and he's very good at it. But his name is Chris Columbo. And he never cooperated either.
No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually got a chance to visit Chris in upstate New York a couple weeks ago when I was up there. I went to his house, which was Joe's house. Very nice guy, extremely nice guy. Invited me into his home. We actually recorded some stuff together. It's going to be coming out pretty soon. And he didn't have the best choices of thoughts on Sammy and some of the things that Sammy had recently said about some of his brothers. So,
all right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be interesting.
That's before my era.
Yeah.
So when
they
talk, we don't know what's true or not. They know.
Right.
That's their thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself now? I don't know, a year from now, 2 years from now, what do you want to be doing?
Like I said, in the movie industry, in that line of work.
Well, I think that about wraps it up, man. I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, we've been trying to put this thing together for a while. Obviously, you had, situations you wanted to handle. There's another guy that we've talked about, Matt Cox, down there in Tampa. I think you and him would have an excellent show.
And we recently,
I'll be on there soon.
We recently done a show, and we kind of talked about this little beef that you guys had going, and it got a lot of traction on there. And a lot of people were in the comments saying that I can't wait for you and Gene to sit down and talk. So, you know, man, I appreciate you coming on. I wish you nothing but success going forward. Are you planning to, obviously, if something presents itself, you're going to handle it accordingly. Do you think you're done doing shit that's going to land you back in jail?
Yeah, like I said, this is how I am. I don't look for trouble, but I don't run from it. Right. So if that's my thing, like I don't look for it, but if you come my way looking for a fight, you're going to get one. So don't think like it's going to be, oh, I'm sorry. That's not happening. I'm still like that to this day. Just because I did what I did, my nuts are not clipped. And everyone knows that. Now I am. I'm very confidential. I don't take shit from nobody. They can sit and talk about their little fake stories. If you approach me in a wrong manner, I'm going to disrespect you. And no matter who you are. You know, that's just the way I am.
And that's the one thing, too, that I'll give you. I'm following you on Instagram. You post wherever you are. You don't.
Wherever I am.
You don't hide.
Yeah.
You and Aralata are the two guys that don't give a fuck. Like, I actually went to, I was on Ian Bick's show. And after I got
done. I was locked up with him.
Yeah.
I was locked up with Anthony. Yeah.
Oh, Anthony. When I got done with Ian, I went and Anthony, like, took me out, showed me around, took me to dinner. I mean, super nice guy. And I was like, you're back in the same area that you operated in. You post where you're at. You post if you're at fights. Mm-hmm. And like, there's something to be said for doing that, you know, whatever people want to call it, whatever we want to classify it as, and then coming right back to that same area and being as public on social media platform. Mm-hmm. There is something to be said for that.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, I know Anthony very well. Anthony's a ballsy dude too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He told me, he's like, look, I'm not trying to be rude, but he's like, I'm not going to be out long. He's like, I don't like to stay out past 8:30. He's like, cause I know me, if somebody says something, I'm not going to be able to hold back. And he's like, I'm going home. He's like, I don't want you to think I'm being rude, but he's like 8:30. I'm out of here.
And I was and also because people, you know, a lot of people love me. I have a lot of people on my side and people don't like that. I have so many friends in Florida and New York still that people hate that I have that it factor and everybody likes me. Mm-hmm. It bothers them. So they have to create this, you know, this persona to make me look bad because they hate the fact that the way I made this and I'm not alone, I'm not miserable. It bothers them, you know?
Yep. Well, Gene, I appreciate you coming on the show, my friend.
Thank you, man. For real.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Gene Barillo. And unfortunately, we are out of time. Tune in next week for an all new episode of Crime and Entertainment. Gene, we appreciate you.
Take care, buddy.
Boy, oh boy, what an episode that was. I gotta believe we have not heard the end of the beef between Gene and Joey over there. And I actually do like Joey's podcast. He does get some interesting stuff on there. You know, is it the best for him to be doing? That's up to Joey. Joey knows better than me. I mean, Joey's, you know, for the most part, able to evade, you know, spending decades in prison. I think he's done like 13 years total. So for anybody to say what he can and can't do, I mean, that's up to him. You know, he stayed one step ahead of the law in most cases for quite some time. And who says that man's even involved in anything but this right now? You know, I don't know. I am a fan of his show. But obviously, you know, Gene and him have had words. Gene has words with a lot of people. Joey has words with a few people. And I think that's, you know, there's no law that says everybody needs to get along. You know, it's not the fucking Republican Democratic Party. Nobody's got to switch sides. Nobody's got to hate somebody for not liking another person for whatever reason. You know, everybody's free to make their own decision. And in this mob tube world, I think someone gets pigeonholed and, oh, you got to pick a side. Nobody's got to pick shit. You know, I've interviewed people that were informants. I've interviewed people that never talk. I've got an interview dropping either today or tomorrow. Actually giving you guys two back to back with Chris Colombo, whose father was Joe Colombo. He never talked. He never ratted on nobody. He took a little pinch for bookmaking, and he unloads on Sammy the Bull and Sal Palisi. And I've got no problems, you know, with those guys either personally, but Chris does because they mentioned his father's name. So you're going to have to check out that one as well after you get done taking a listen to this one, because he unloads on Sammy and Sal. I actually went to New York. I went to Chris's home. And we filmed this in his studio. So definitely go take a listen to that. All of our back episodes, man, I'm sure there'll be something on there you'd want to take a peek at. So go give it a listen. Follow us on YouTube, like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. That way you get notified every time we drop a video. We're, of course, everywhere you get your audio podcast, folks. Apple, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon Podcast. If it's out there, Crime and Entertainment is on it. Of course, on the social medias, Instagram, Crime, the letter N, and Entertainment. Right there, you can find our links to our link tree, and it's pretty much got links to everything that we're on. So please go. That's the easiest way to share the show, folks. Share them up on TikTok as well, on the TikToks. Put out one a week on the TikToks, one a week on the shorts, or excuse me, one a day, not one a week. I'm doing a lot more than that. I don't want to short sell myself. So we hope everybody has a great Christmas. Thanks for rocking with us all year long. Appreciate it. A lot of good stuff lined up to kick off 2024. That will do it for this episode of our Christmas episode with Gene Borello. Please let me know what you think in the comments on YouTube. And that is it. Everybody have a very Merry Christmas.